Milwaukee Bucks last night as Giannis and company get their eighth consecutive victory. Let's hit the great Midwest Bank hotline and welcome in from Radio.com Sports NBA insider Rick Bucher.
Insider calls brought to you by the midsize mattress from Mercedes-Benz Vans. Here, Rick in on Scale and Pals, a brand new NBA podcast out now on Radio.com and the Radio.com app. All you got to do is search Scale, S-C-A-L.
Hey, Rick, thanks for the time, and let's get the national perspective about a team that is rolling. Eight consecutive victories, 14-3 mark, 17 consecutive double-doubles. For Giannis, I could go on and on. What's the national perspective? How good are the Bucks?
Well, there's certainly in the conversation for title contention once again, especially with LeBron out of the East. They're in that special place now, and living in the Bay Area, it's sort of the same as what the Golden State Warriors were the last 3-4 years, is that we're not really going to get a true temperature on who they are until we get to the postseason. They're doing what everybody would expect them to do. I can't give you the full, you know, what the buzz is among national writers, because I don't know that there's been a lot of talk about the Bucks in particular, as far as what they're doing now. They're doing what they're supposed to do. I think what's interesting is their roster is deeper, and Mike Budenholzer is getting more from more guys, and I think that makes them even more potent as a regular season team. The question is, when you shorten your roster, when you shorten your rotation in the playoffs, who is going to play, and are they going to be a better team at that point? And when the pace slows down, has Giannis developed enough below the free throw line as a playmaker to be that guy who takes them to the finals out of the East? I don't know that we're really going to get those answers until we get to April. So as of right now, certainly Giannis' three-point shooting has improved. He's an MVP candidate. But what this team is collectively going to do, I don't know that we can get a read on that, no matter how dominant they are in the regular season, just because we saw sort of the switch in the playoffs last year. The question is, are they going to be significantly different? Is Giannis going to be significantly different when we see him in the postseason this time around?
No, and that leads me to my next question, and that is, you know, we're seeing maybe a little bit of a morphing in the NBA to the big three into the 1-2 punch around the league. And the Bucks, I mean, some would argue they don't even have the 1-2 punch, let alone the big three.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. It really comes down to if you take away or you make things difficult on the best player on a team, where do you turn to next? And can that guy get it done? And you could make the case when you look at Toronto as an example of the latest championship team. I don't know if you could identify their big three necessarily, but what they had was they had 3, 4, 5 guys under pressure who could come through. Fred VanVleet gave you some big moments. Pascal Siakam gave you some big moments. Obviously, Kawhi Leonard gave you some big moments. Kyle Lowry gave you some big moments. It really comes down to, I don't know that you necessarily need to be able to identify your big three, but you need to have those guys who are, you know, in a playoff series. Can they win you a game? Can they be that guy who knocks down the big shot? And That's going to be the question with the Bucks. Is Chris Middleton going to come through and have you, and give you that moment? And this has been the thing that's made me nervous about the Bucks ever since Malcolm Brogdon left town. Because to me, Malcolm was one of those guys who gave you some big moments last year. Mm-hmm. And there's some other guys that are still on the roster that did not come through. And so the as currently comprised, having been through it once, are there guys that are now going to step up this time around? Again, I wish I could be a greater prognosticator, but I'd be lying if I said that anything that a guy does in the regular season now is going to be an indicator of what he's going to be able to do in the playoffs when a team is game planning for
you. Boy, but it sure is fun to watch right now in Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I will say this. I mean, this is like it'll be interesting to see what the referendum of winning, you know, what the team does in the playoffs. But all of this success and all that the team has done in terms of spending money and adding players and rolling through the season the way they are, if you're trying to make a case for Giannis that, hey, we can build a blockbuster team, stay, they're doing a good job of that. So there is something to be gained out of what they're doing right now in terms of building a team that has this much success during the regular season, and that's making a strong case for Giannis to stay. And before you ask, no, I haven't heard a single word about him going anyplace else.
Breaking news from Rick Bucher.
I look at him, and I haven't gotten any indication. Every time somebody's asked me that question, you know, there's usually stuff that kind of leaks out. Even a guy like Anthony Davis right now with the Lakers and all the success they've had, he's been very circumspect about, I'm going to wait until the end of the year. Giannis, I put Giannis in the Klay Thompson camp of a year ago. Klay Thompson wouldn't fully commit, but he said, this is where I want to be. And unless, you know, something dramatic changes, that's what I plan to do. I'm getting the same drumbeat from behind the scenes in terms of what Giannis's thinking is.
You're listening to Chuck and Winkler on 105.7 FM, The Fan. We're on the line now with Radio.com Sports NBA insider Rick Bucher. Rick, when we take a look at the Eastern Conference, my big question today was, can anybody hang with the Bucks this season? I mean, it's an 82-game season. We're still early on. What's going on right now in Philadelphia? Like, last night, we see it again. Joel Embiid goes scoreless for the first time in his career. They seem like they're a little bit of a mess.
Yes. Well, and I've thought that, and I've always felt that's their Achilles heel, is I'm just not sure that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are fit together. And as Ben Simmons grows, Joel Embiid has had to take a little more of a back seat. Now they added Al Horford because they wanted that depth, because they had some questions about, you know, how do we keep Embiid healthy through the year? And you pay Tobias Harris. Now he's trying to demonstrate what he can do. I thought losing both Jimmy Butler and J.J. Redick were definite negatives for them in terms of their leadership, in terms of their veteran presence. And so I know a lot of people were high on Philadelphia as potentially the team coming out of the East. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a mixed bag, and I'm not Ben Simmons is a strange cat for me. Has 14 assists, but only scores 10 points and has two free throws in 41 minutes. In 10, 15 years ago, you'd be satisfied with that as a point guard if you had that big other scorer. Mm-hmm. But if you look down the line, they don't have that. And if you're a point guard in the league these days, handling the ball that much with as quick as the game is played, you can't be scoring 10 points in 41 minutes. It sounds strange when a guy is getting 14 dimes, but it's not the way the game is played. And I'm not convinced that where Ben Simmons has to operate on the floor, and sometimes he's aggressive, sometimes he's not, that's ultimately going to work. I think Embiid is the best player on the team. If you ask me who I would build around, in spite of the fact that the game is so fast and a little harder to build around big men, I would be building around Embiid. But I don't think that their combination ultimately is going to work, whether it's now or whether it's later.
Well, the 76ers have been a disappointment at 11-6. The Celtics have kind of been the team that's caught everybody by surprise in the Eastern Conference. They're 12-4, but the Miami Heat as well, 12-4. Both teams 7-3 in their last 10 games. What have you seen from those two teams? Are they legit, or is it just early in the season and they've gotten hot?
I believe they're both legit as top five teams in the Eastern Conference. I don't think that's going to change. I'm not sold on the Celtics. I never thought of the Heat as a title contender. I still struggle to get those words out of my mouth and talking about the Heat. I feel the same with the Boston Celtics. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team. I'm not sure who their go-to guy is. I think most people would say it's Jason Tatum, but I've seen too many situations where he's not quite dominant enough physically that you can't make the game hard on him, and I don't think he's a playmaker in terms of if he can't get his shot, he's going to create something for somebody else. And with Kemba, I thought they overpaid, and I think you saw it the other night, I think it was against the Clippers. When he plays against length and size, which is what you're going to face when you get to the postseason, he's going to struggle. It's simply a function of his size. And so, if there's a team in the Eastern Conference that remains a threat, to me, it's the Toronto Raptors. Mm. They have the experience of having got there. I know they don't have Kawhi, but they got some young guys who continue to grow, and Siakam, and Fred VanVleet, and they have that institutional knowledge now of what it takes. And so there's no situation, certainly not during the regular season or pretty much at any point. I mean, they faced down the defending champions. They made all of the plays that they had to win a championship. That kind of knowledge and confidence under pressure now is just invaluable for a team. And are they not quite as talented as last year? Sure, but I'm not sure across the board in the Eastern Conference that there's anybody that's markedly more talented when it comes to playing in the playoffs. I think they're as much of a threat as anybody else. And if you said who are you taking, Boston, Miami, or Toronto, I would take Toronto.
Rick, final thing here. The NBA, I was reading a couple of different articles, and quite frankly, it got a little convoluted, so I quit on it. About the NBA changing their stance a little bit, or at least entertaining the idea of a different playoff structure, lessening the amount of games played. They've already backed off the back-to-backs over the last year or two. They've partnered up with a gambling entity. I mean, they seem to be cutting edge. Any movement in that? Are we going to see a landscape change?
Well, it will be interesting if we see. I think eventually we will. How dramatic it will be is the question. I know there is some healthy resistance to making some of the sweeping changes that they'd like to make. This is really a reaction to the fact that the overall viewership in the U.S. is down for TNT and ESPN. I'm just not sure that that's how we should be viewing the health of the league. I mean, here's the reality, and I learned this years ago going to the NBA offices, is that for the longest time we've done this as sports fans. We gauge the health of a league based on what? TV ratings and attendance.
Sure.
And what I learned going into the NBA offices is that they have about a dozen revenue streams, and that they judge how healthy they are and how successful they are based on selling licensing rights, selling merchandise, reaching audiences that are never going to actually see or attend an NBA game. And so I know they're doing this. I think they're doing it to placate their broadcast partners. But there's a reason we got into that whole China mess, because when you look at international rights and you look at their trying to maintain their global reach, that's the secret sauce for the NBA. That's what the NBA has that Major League Baseball does not, that the NFL does not, and that's where they can continue to grow and make money. The fact is that NBA fans, yeah, you may lose a few in the U.S., but I believe it's as much. The NBA owns more of the sports landscape in terms of what we talk about and how much social media attention they get. Yeah. I just think we're in an age where we have an up and coming audience that really loves the NBA, but they don't watch games. They watch highlights. They talk about it on social media. They'll buy a jersey, but they're not necessarily going to buy a league pass, or they're going to spend 2.5 hours sitting down to watch a game. And I don't know that changing the schedule or making an in-season tournament or doing any of these things, it may cause a certain bump, but it's not. I think the consumer, and I think the way the audience consumes sports has just changed. I don't know that for the NBA in particular, unless you take it down to like 60 games, 66 games where every single game is vital, maybe that's it. But they're talking about reducing it by a few games and then trying to increase the value or the meaning of each game. And I just think that that's a lot of games. That's a lot of games for anybody to sit down. People are more interested in talking about who's going to team up with who next summer and who's the number one draft pick going to be than they are about actually sitting down and talking about the game itself.
Yeah, four games, I don't know if it's going to make that big of a difference.
You can't see it.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate the fact that the NBA is willing to take some risks, too, as a professional association. I mean, I like that a lot. And internationally, I think it probably has the best chance over football and baseball. I agree with you, to have some pretty decent success. Rick, I appreciate it, man. Great stuff. And we'll talk again, all right?
Sounds good.
All right, guys. There he is, Rick Bucher, NBA Insider, Radio.com Sports.
Yeah, Insider Call is brought to you by the Midsize Metros from Mercedes-Benz Vans. You can hear Rick on Scaling Pals, which is a brand-new NBA podcast that's out now on Radio.com and the Radio.com app. All you got to do is search Scal, S-C-A-L. And he joined us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019. Look no further and call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local, common-sense lending to your community since 1935.